Ho, 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 ho! Merry Christmas!
Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well. We're close to the holidays, and so today we thought it would be fun to host a little bit lighter podcast, something that would get you into the holiday spirit. As you might imagine, at Mindspring, we often have these lively conversations about books and movies, kind of endless Slack discussions about what you might recommend, or book reviews, movie reviews. And it seems like we always have this handful of Christmas movies that pop up, and we often quote them. We can apply them to literally any situation at times. So as we were talking about this, we just thought it would be really fun to listen to some clips, talk about some kind of classic Christmas movies, and look at the learning themes throughout them. So along for the ride, I have four great members of our team who are going to help me discuss it. So if you all want to just go ahead, let's start with our producer, Jeff. Introduce yourself, and these are all former guests of the podcast, and I'm happy to have you back.
Thanks, Miriam. My name's Jeff, marketing manager at Mindspring, and of course, the producer of the podcast. I'm excited to talk about Christmas movies.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Yeah.
I'm Cade Wilson. I'm a solutions architect at Mindspring. I do not do anything with building houses, despite the title, confusion there, but I get to have a lot of fun making really cool learning experiences.
Hi, I'm Becky, part of the instructional design team here at Mindspring, so happy to chat about Christmas movies.
And my name is Kevin Lohman. I am also on the instructional design team here at Mindspring, and love working with all these folks, and Christmas movies are exciting and fun. It'll be a good conversation.
Yeah, for sure. One of the great things I love talking about our team is we always have this focus of learning. Like I remember talking to someone a few years ago who was just watching commercials, and they were like, I noticed the sequencing and the way they were introducing this and then how the image helped me, you know. And we just are always thinking about learning and kind of applying that lens to any life situation. So when we started thinking about holiday movies, Christmas movies, the ideas came pretty fast, and we actually kind of pared down this list from where we were at the beginning. But what's amazing about that is that allows this whole team to make just amazing learning experiences for our clients, just because of that lens of looking at the world. So we're going to get started. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to discuss six movies, some at a little more length than others. We all have our sort of favorites. But what we're going to do is summarize it. We'll play a clip at some point, a couple clips, and then we're just going to talk about the movie through a lens of learning.
You're full of beans, and so's your old man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah!
Says who?
Says me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah!
I double dare you.
The exact exchange and nuance of phrase in this ritual is very important.
Huh, are you kidding? Stick my tongue to that stupid pole, that's dumb.
That's cause you know it'll stick.
You're full of it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah!
Well, I double dog dare you.
Now it was serious. A double dog dare. What else was left but a triple dare you? And finally, the coup de grace of all dares, the sinister triple dog dare.
I triple dog dare you!
Schwartz created a slight breach of etiquette by skipping the triple dare and going right for the throat.
All right, all right. Come on, Karen.
Well, go on, smartass, and do it.
I'm going.
Flick's spine stiffened, his lips curled in a defiant sneer. There was no going back now.
This is nuts.
What would you like for Christmas?
Horrified, I heard myself blurted out.
I want an official Red Ryder carbon action 2-inch air range ball air rifle.
Ooh.
No. Shoot your eye out.
Oh, no. It was the classic mother BB gun block. You'll shoot your eye out.
All right, so what you heard there were a couple classic clips from A Christmas Story. And if you've never watched A Christmas Story, basically it follows the story of Ralphie Parker, who, it's a long story, lots of little details, but essentially he spends his time either dodging a bullet, spending some time on the playground, which you heard the triple dog dare there, every kid's nightmare, sticking your tongue to the flagpole. But really what he wants is he wants a Red Ryder air rifle for Christmas. And throughout the story, he's trying to slip that in various ways with his mom, with his dad, with his teacher, to make sure that he gets that for Christmas. And as a spoiler alert, he actually does get it for Christmas. And then what you heard at the end was when he actually shot it, it ricocheted, hit him in the glasses, and for a moment he thought he did shoot his eye out. So it's a fun story. But Kate, you had some kind of really interesting thoughts on the whole concept of being told you're going to shoot your eye, like over and over and over, basically being told you're going to fail. Like, you can't do this. It's not safe.
Yeah. So when I was rewatching these clips, I was thinking about how, especially when it comes to learning, people talk about, I'm not this type of learner, and you've been told that you can't, you may not be smart, you might not be intelligent, you might not be able to learn this way, or it might be really tough for you to understand things if it's, you know, if you're engaging with it in this other way. And then you might bump into that type of thing one time, and that experience may feel true, but it's really because it's been told to you and it's been ingrained within you for so long. You know, an example of this, I have somebody in my own life who, she was told over and over, you know, and made to feel like, I'm not smart, I can't take college courses. And so the first course she jumped into, it was really, really tough. And so it was basically confirmed to her that she wasn't smart enough. But then she just needed to know how to study. Mm-hmm, and right. So it was like this reality of like, just because you've been told something over and over doesn't mean that that's true about you. And I think that is really applicable when it comes to learning.
Well, for sure. And in this case, like Ralphie sort of had the experience at the end. He was told he was always going to shoot his eye out. You know, there's no real like parental guidance in this movie to make sure he doesn't shoot his eye out. But once he learned, he had his glasses, now he's going to learn how to successfully shoot the gun. And it was just a different experience from what he'd been told. So I like here, and I think as we design for learners in our organizations, keeping in mind that user experience, and not just that, but keeping in mind that they come with preconceived ideas depending on the topic. You know, that I might not be good at, there's no way, like I'm terrible at learning software. There's no way I can do, and sort of keeping in mind what our learners come with as they enter any learning experience is really important.
But I did learn at an early age that tongue does stick to the frozen floor. Yeah. I don't know why I did it, but I don't know if any of you have done it too.
It was probably a double dog dare.
It probably was. I remember it was a goalpost. It was a metal one, and I had to use hot water to get it off.
In my experience, they came on the intercom and said at recess, don't stick your tongue to any... Like, why would you do that in elementary school?
What kind of school did you go to, Mary?
I know, right? They told us that, so...
14
this
kids
is like,
with their tongues.
This is like,
what is a kid going to do? If you're told not to do something, are you
going
to try?
Yeah, which is probably more of a commentary on me. So I did it, and there was no hot water to be found, so I just had to rip my tongue off and run inside. It was terrible. Yeah. But anyway,
there is another instructional
Becky.
Piece in here, especially when we're thinking about instructional design. Throughout the entire movie, the narrator comes in and tells the story, leads the story along. And that's something we'd like to remember when we're creating modules and learning experiences as well, is that the narrator is the one who can guide your learning and make it all more applicable.
Mm-hmm. Well, instead of having just a singular voice, mm-hmm. like you can almost have your characters with very minimal effort. It might just be an image on a screen, but then if you're providing a narrator, like you said, you're bringing two voices to that experience.
Before we move on from the tongue scene, which always traumatized me as a child, I don't know, all you people who like actually did that, like I wouldn't
You're
come within like 10 feet of a frozen pole when I was a kid because I was afraid my tongue would accidentally get stuck.
So I didn't
on
see
it.
That before I did it.
No,
I think
okay,
I was just,
yeah, see,
like you said,
traumatized.
Dare.
Okay. As we were rewatching that clip, though, I was thinking of a little bit of social learning. Right, it's a big buzzword in our world today, you know, getting a social group together into complete social learning. He would have never done that without the social pressure.
That's good. Motivation.
Their social group, the people that you're with, definitely influence you and will motivate you to do something. And I think in a learning atmosphere, and we're taking a negative example, trying to look at it in the positive.
Yeah.
In a learning example, getting a social group involved and having other people discussing, and it will encourage you to complete a task, a learning task, if you will, that you may not have done by yourself. So
saying L&D leaders should triple dog dare.
I'm just saying, it might not be a bad idea.
Yeah. Have a button. Do you want a triple dog dare?
Kind of like Google used to have the do you feel lucky? Like, I'm feeling
lucky.
Yeah. I like that, Kevin. That's a great, I mean, obviously it was a negative example in a Christmas story.
That's right.
But you're right, like, let's take a look at that triple dog dare. That could be the new buzzword for next year, 2023.
Miriam, you said, sorry, that was a spoiler, but in our house, we have like a rule. There's like a benchmark. If you've been X amount of time out from the premiere of something, it's no longer
a
spoiler.
Okay.
This one's 39 years late, so I don't know that we can have a spoiler.
Okay. That's a great point, thanks. I feel better about it now.
Yeah, we're not spoiling
anybody's
it.
Day.
Yeah.
Well, the next one might be a little more out of scope.
Yeah.
For spoilers.
Right.
39, the next one. I think they just celebrated their 75th anniversary of this movie.
So you guys already kind of teased it. So we wanted to take a look at It's a Wonderful Life.
The fool flew all the way up here in a blizzard.
Harry, how about your banquet in New York?
Oh, I left right in the middle of it as soon as I got Mary's telegram. Good idea, Ernie. A toast. To my big brother, George, the richest man in town.
That's right. Atta boy, Claire.
Really a classic. You said it's, 75 years?
Yeah, 75th anniversary, I think, this year.
Tell us, Kevin, I know this movie is your favorite.
It is
so
my
we're
favorite.
Just going to hand it over to you at this point.
Yeah, we watch it every single year. It's still one that my wife and kids and I can curl up and watch the whole thing from start to finish before Christmas. If you haven't seen it, totally recommend it. I know it's an oldie, but it is certainly a goodie.
Stands up.
In the story, we're not worried about spoilers too much, but George is our main character, and it's an interesting story because you get to follow George's life throughout the entire thing. And throughout the story, George is looking for the wonderful life, and he's got an idea about what he thinks is the wonderful life, the perfect life. And his idea is to travel and to get outside his little town and to see the world and to experience new things and to just go out and, like, every stage of his life, he's trying to get out of this town, this crummy little town, and go and do something new and exciting. And as the story goes, every time he's at a point where that could happen, a situation comes up where he has to stay in his small town and he has to reinvest into his town. He can't ever escape. At the end of the movie, he is thinks that his life has been a failure due to a lot of things that have happened. But in his mind, right, he wasn't able to, he's got all these brochures of all these places that he wanted to visit, he throws them away, I mean, he wasn't able to do what he actually wanted to do. But in the end of the movie, he is reminded that even through his, pursuit of this idealized, wonderful life, he's had a wonderful life all along. He's reminded right in the end that what he has is, better than what he could have ever imagined through all of his traveling. So, really good, feel-good movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic for a reason. It's one that never, obviously, after 75 years. And I think it speaks to the human spirit, too. But Kevin, you had a really interesting take on it in terms of learning that I think we, as learning experience designers, we bump into a lot. Like, we do always want to be on the forefront of innovation and what comes next and how can we create a better learning experience for our users, for our participants. But also, I'm going to let you talk to this. We also have to keep in mind what really constitutes best. So what's your take on this movie?
Yeah, I see George pursuing the adventurous, flashy life throughout this entire movie, thinking that is the best way to do life. And I see a lot of learning professionals who look for the flashy, exciting, newest technology, newest thing to try to make their learning experience the best learning experience possible. And I have seen a lot of poorly done learning thrown into a brand new modality, whether it's XR or a brand new flashy animation type, thinking that that is going to do it, that is going to make that learning super, super impactful. And it falls flat, and it usually does, because great learning isn't based on how flashy everything is. It's based on the fundamentals of life here. With George, the fundamentals of his wonderful life were family and friends and investing into the community and building hard work and building this community of people that can support him. In a learning standpoint, the best learning is based on learning science and the fundamentals of instructional design and understanding your learners and structuring it the right way. And none of that is the super flashy things that you can get at the end, but that is what truly determines whether it's really good, authentic learning. That's your It's a Wonderful Life learning. That was the theme that I saw as I was looking through It's a Wonderful Life and connecting it to learning. I think, just as George found out at the end that the best life is one based on the fundamentals, I think the best learning is often based on structuring it the right way and using the correct instructional design.
And to be clear, like, we love XR around here.
Like,
we use it all the time, and it's an amazing modality. But like you said, you have to have the foundation of good learning underneath that, a good quality user experience that reinforces what's happening in your XR, using AR, whatever the case may be, your modality needs to fit. So, but that was a very cool, like, I hadn't really thought of that at all. So that was a great application in that movie.
I think there are a few pieces of morality and ethics too when he's talking to bigger banks and how they're trying to run people out of town. And also, it's a big part of it is how he forgets himself too at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
He thinks about taking his life, and a lot of people get overwhelmed with the day-to-day problems and don't see the bigger picture. And at the end, I think it's his angel, and they go, "Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives, and when he isn't around, he leaves a big hole." And so there's a lot about maybe small contributions adding up. Because at the end of the movie, they have everyone there. He had no idea how many people he touched throughout his life and the impact that made of just maybe a small change.
Yeah, no, Jeff, you know, we should have saved that comment for the end. It's so inspirational. And I mean that sincerely. Because I do think, especially over the past couple of years, if you are on a L&D team, like, there has been a lot of pressure. Pandemic, like, a lot of stress. And just to encourage those of you that are listening, like, you probably have no idea, just small, even maybe just like a question you answered for someone who's struggling to get through a module, or you approach it in a different way, like you were talking about, Kate, and encourage someone that they could actually learn this new thing. We want to encourage those of you that are listening, like, you have made a big impact. If you are on a learning and development team, you are doing great work, and there are a lot of people out there who appreciate it, and they probably just never take the time to tell you. That's another great application.
Yeah, go watch that movie.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, exactly. So our next movie that we'd like to discuss, we're moving now not from 75 years ago, but from the 80s. Many of us, this is sort of a childhood classic or shortly thereafter, but Home Alone.
How do you want to go in?
We'll go to the back door. Maybe he'll let us in. You never know.
Yeah, he's a kid. Kids are stupid.
Bless his highly nutritious microwaveable macaroni and cheese dinner and the people who sold it on sale. Amen.
Merry Christmas, little fella.
We know that you're in there and that you're all alone.
Yeah, come on, kid, open up.
It's Santa Claus and it's Elf.
We're not gonna hurt you.
No, no. Got some nice presents for you.
Be a good little fella now and open the door.
Shoot!
What? 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 What happened?
Get that little...
But Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit about Home Alone if our listeners haven't watched it?
Yeah, it starts with Kevin's family going to Paris for vacation, and I believe there's a storm, and so they rush out of the house, all the alarms are not working, and somehow they forget Kevin. And so now Kevin is home alone until they can get back. and there are these two burglars.
Not very smart ones.
Not very smart, but they are kind of in the neighborhoods looking for empty houses and spot this one and try to break into the house while Kevin defends it with his own little antics. And so basically it's all about him kind of defending the house until the family gets home, showing how creative Kevin is, basically.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, there's some of you that have watched it. Like, what are some of your favorite sort of creative scenes where Kevin is defending his house?
I always remember the scene where he's trying to convince the robbers that the whole family's there, so he's got, like, the train set up, and, he's got a party going on behind the curtains, and...
TV's playing.
The TV's playing, yeah. Deceiving the poor robbers, thinking that the whole family's home.
The one that always traumatized me was the steel tool case.
Oh, gosh.
That comes flying down. I was always like, how did a kid that weighs like
right?
a third of this get this to here?
You know, a lot of intricate setups.
Yeah, for me, it was always the spider.
Oh,
no,
the spider was the one. Well, Kevin's older brother, you know, not a very nice teenager, basically, but has a tarantula in a cage, and so it escapes. But Kevin uses that to attack the robbers. So yeah, there's a lot here. I think kind of at the base of it, and again, maybe we're going to, why is fear in a lot of these Christmas movies? I'm just realizing that, but it's a feel-good movie. It's not that the robbers are not intelligent, but he is motivated by fear and also like wanting to defend his house. But from that springs all these creative solutions. And I'm not advocating that we traumatize or make our learners fearful. It's more about like just motivation in general. I think a lot of times as learning professionals, we tend to sort of think, well, either it's compliance training and they have to do it, or if we build it, they'll come, because like we do good work, it's good stuff. And we forget to sort of think, well, what's their motivation behind this, and how can I motivate someone to start it, to continue halfway through, and then to finish?
I was thinking of motivation as I was thinking about this movie. I think that, like, the first day or so that he's home alone, he doesn't have a mission, doesn't have a goal. The robbers aren't there yet, and he just eats junk food and watches TV. And at the end of the day, he's completely bored and worn out and he's got no purpose, right? I imagine learners jumping into an e-learning module, and as fun as it may look and seem, if we don't start with an objective or a purpose, partway into this thing, everybody has lost all motivation to complete it. And as soon as he has a purpose, right? And his purpose becomes, these guys are going to break into my house. I'm going to defend my house, right? He has a purpose. He gets organized. And he gets work done. And he accomplishes a lot. So I think it has a lot to say about how do we motivate our learners right at the beginning by giving them a purpose, giving them a goal to finish here. Because he got a lot of stuff done once he had an actual purpose.
And he worked with the tools he had at his disposal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to speak to that, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's an e-learning module. It might be an ILT session or a virtual ILT. I think sometimes, too, giving him a goal or a purpose, but it doesn't need to be, like, there's nothing worse than the objectives of this course are 3 bullet points, right? Like, if we can couch them in language, like, when you're done, you're going to know how to do this. Or in Kevin's case, you are going to successfully thwart the robbers.
Yep.
You're going to be hauled away. And look at you. You're like an 8-year-old kid who did maybe 10, 8, 10, I forget how old he is. But you've defended your house. Like, all of a sudden, that's a totally different thing. What if we wrote objectives for Home Alone? Like, the goal of this course will be, you will learn how to use a spider to, that just, we need to create excitement at the beginning and give people a purpose.
So something when you mentioned, like, why this idea of, like, this theme of fear seems to be present in all these Christmas movies. But it to me, it's almost like there's this, like, with the holidays and Christmas, there's this, like, underlying theme of, like, it's a time of joyfulness, of peace, of all these things. But when you juxtapose that against this other thing, like fear or loneliness or anything like that, when it comes to learning, I think it's always a great opportunity to slightly surprise the learners with what they're going to be experiencing. They may be, a lot of times, learners jump into something and they have an expectation, assumption about, this is going to be boring, this is going to be dry, this is going to be this or that. But we can kind of turn that on its head and say, what you think about this and how you are always stepping into this and assuming this to be, we can kind of flip that upside down and make it very different. And we can juxtapose your expectations against the reality. So that's just something that I was thinking about as you mentioned, like this fear component. And, you know, I'm watching a little GIF right now from Home Alone of the paint can swing down and slam him in the head.
Right.
And not that, you know, right, like we're not trying to slam these learners in the head with things, but having that expectation of, like, I'm just walking up steps. Oh, nope, here's the can of paint coming at me. Just is a different experience for them.
No, I love that. I mean, it really does. It speaks to motivation, right? Like, we're motivating them in a way because they have a certain set of expectations, and an element of surprise changes all of that. And that's a really important thing to keep in mind whenever possible. You know, when we're designing learning, what is that small element of surprise that keeps people on their toes? And it motivates them to keep going, because when's the next can of paint coming? Or when am I going to step on the nail? Or when am I going to step on the ornaments? Or whatever the case may be from that movie. But yeah, great. I mean, Home Alone, it is a classic, and it's a fun movie to watch.
How many are there now?
Were there three?
Well, there's like three, but there's also like variations.
How many with Macaulay Culkin? Those are the only ones that
three with Macaulay Culkin. They did a four like in the early 2000s.
It's a lot of house break-ins.
The trope is played.
The real lesson is keep an eye on your stuff.
That's right.
And know where your children are.
Right.
That's a year long lesson. Yeah. Probably.
All right, so let's move on then.
Going for a new amateur recreational saucer sled land speed record, Clark W. Griswold Jr.
Remember, don't try this at home, kids. I am a professional. Bingo.
Vacation is another kind of 80s, 90s classic movie starring Chevy Chase. And Becky, one of your favorites, why don't you tell us a little bit about it? There's a lot of lessons in this movie. I'm not sure they're all good ones, but there's a lot of lessons.
Well, poor Clark. All he wants to do is give his family the best Christmas ever. He wants to have it all perfect and wonderful, and he just keeps getting disaster upon him time after time again, whether it be from his Christmas tree hunt to his sledding adventure to his Christmas bonus
that didn't come.
Or his favorite brother-in-law showing up for the for the Christmas activities. There's, you know, the fried cat in it. I mean, no matter what the poor man does to try to make this Christmas wonderful, Christmassy for his family, it gets sidelined by something.
Yeah, there's so many things we could learn from. The thing about this is, though, I'm not really sure Clark ever learned the lessons, but, like, we can draw them out.
We learned along the way.
There's
something to be said about case studies.
Yes, right, exactly, case studies. And so there's a couple things here. One, I think he does sort of resonate with every person who's tried to create this perfect holiday, right? All these things he's doing. And so there's that sort of element. If we think about our learning, like our illustrations, our scenarios, our stories, our case studies, do they resonate with everyone who is participating and learning? And then, I don't know, and we could talk about learning through failure in about 100 examples. So what do you guys think about Christmas Vacation?
Well, I will jump in. It's the learning through failure, or the perception of success, too.
Right.
So when he powers the cords together and the lights go on, he didn't actually solve the issue, but the lights still go on.
Right.
And it's one of those ideas of, are we actually solving the root learning issue here? Or, you know, is somebody just making it through the modules of the curriculum that the L&D, you know, people want their learners to get through? I had a conversation yesterday with somebody about Well, what happens if they seem like they get it? You know, essentially they plug it in, the lights go on, but then we go, oh, 30 days later, 60 days later, they don't actually understand what they did to get those lights on, and now they're back to the lights are off.
Well, in the movie, for, I don't know, I mean, if you haven't seen it, his wife was down in the basement just flipping switches on and off and happened to hit a random light switch, which is what powered up his extension cords and made all the lights. But he wasn't aware of it, and she wasn't really either till the end. So that's a great point, Cade.
In my line of work, I end up reviewing a lot of e-learning modules, and you're going through them quick, and I'm not reading the content, I'm looking for other things, and a lot of them have a quiz at the end, right? You get the five questions. And gosh darn it, every once in a while, as I'm skimming through those modules, I get those five questions, and I'm just clicking, bing, bing, bing. I've gotten them all right before, right?
Yeah.
Like, according to the mechanisms in the course, I successfully learned everything in that module, but it was pure luck.
Yeah, that's a... And to be fair, like, we've all done those things before, too, but I think... you know, in the case of Clark here in the movie, he did really want it to be a genuinely joyful, wonderful, like, ultimate Christmas. And same thing for our learners. I mean, we want them to truly learn. So in Clark's case, right, like, I just still think of the classic example when he gets ready to put the lights on the house, and he pulls the giant ball of lights from the garage, and then he has Rusty try and untangle them. And I just think, like... what if there was a Christmas Vacation 2? Like, did he learn anything, or is he going to pull the same ball of lights out from the garage next year? You know, is he going to know where that switch is or not? So that's something we want to think about with our learners. Like, we don't want them just to get through. Will they know something when they're done, and in 30 days, will they still be able to do that? And maybe even, is there an extension to their learning? So, yeah, Christmas Vacation, we could spend a long time on, that's for sure.
Chevy Chase is a legend.
He really is, and the physical comedy in the movie is just, it's amazing. So we're going to transition from a traditional suburban 80s Christmas to the magical make-believe world of Elf.
And then I traveled to the seven levels of the Candy Cane Forest, past the sea of swirly, twirly gumdrops, and then I walked through the Lincoln Tunnel.
So where were you for the last 30 years?
The North Pole.
Can you pass the maple syrup, please?
I didn't put it. It's spaghetti.
You know what? I think I have some. Yes.
You like sugar, huh?
Is there sugar in syrup?
Yes.
Then yes! We elves try to stick to the four main food groups. Candy, candy canes, candy corns, and syrup.
Number three.
The best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear.
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
10 a.m. Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh my God! Santa here? I know him. I know him.
Cade, for those of our listeners who haven't seen Elf, why don't you tell us a little bit about Elf?
Well, I will definitely do that. For those, the two of you that may have not seen Elf.
Right.
And,
right.
So Elf is essentially, Will Ferrell's the main elf here, and his name is Buddy, which I think is just an awesome name for him here. He is sent to the North Pole as a kid, accidentally. So as a toddler, he's lived at the North Pole since he was a toddler, all the way till being a full-grown adult. And he has just lived with Santa's elves. He's just learned the life of being an elf. And he realizes he just can't, like, he just doesn't quite fit in because he's, like, 6.5 feet tall and just, like, so many other things about him. That's like, you know, he's basically done the ancestry DNA test and found that there's just a different result here than what he was looking for. So he goes and he does this search for his dad. And so he travels to New York and he finds that his dad, he's got a picture of him. His dad is a really successful businessman. And so the whole movie is him trying to build this relationship with his dad, you know, and learning what it means to basically not be an elf and live in New York City, and just his interactions with that urban environment, the and just learning how to not be an elf is just hilarious through the whole thing. And it's he's an elf, so it's obviously right around Christmas time.
Well, and to paint a picture, I mean, he's walking down the streets of New York in green tights, and you know, big shoes with curly cues on the end, bells, his whole elf getup. So when I was thinking about this, and there's actually a pretty interesting article even about it, it was talking about, I mean, Buddy basically did this on his own. I mean, that's the start of the movie. He transitions out of this protected world where he's loved, and even though he doesn't quite fit in, you know, he's taken care of, to New York City. I mean, him going up and down the escalator, that's a great scene. And the article I read had kind of an interesting take, just thinking about self-directed learning. Like, we often will provide resources, or obviously expect people in our organization to do some self-directed learning, right? Like, we're all adults. And Buddy was on a journey of self-exploration and self-directed learning, but it did not go great. I mean, imagine if he could have at least had a little help, you know, like a map of New York, a little booklet of like, here's what to expect. Don't pick gum out from underneath the hand railing. Somebody else, you know, things like that. Someone else is chewing that gum. Tune is not a word.
Chewing.
Someone else. I don't know.
We're going with it.
I don't know. We're off the rails. Anyway. So does anybody, any of you, just what are your thoughts, you know, on poor Buddy trying to navigate on his own throughout New York City?
Well, Buddy never really fit in anywhere. He didn't fit in as an elf. He couldn't do elf things like make toys. And then he didn't fit in New York until he did make some friends.
Yes, he did.
Who helped him fit in a little bit, whether it be down in the mailroom, which probably was not the best influence,
right,
or his brother helping him fit into the family. So that alongside learner did help Buddy throughout.
Yeah, I love that point. I mean, self-directed learning, but with a coach or a mentor or somebody you can run an idea by or whatever, that's what ultimately helped him sort of transition into what the norms were there. Yeah.
And don't forget Zoe Deschanel.
Yes,
yeah,
that's
so
right.
Good. So good.
We could talk a little bit about differentiated instruction for our
yes.
super unique learners here. I think Buddy probably a one-of-a-kind learner.
Yes.
If we were to design a training module for him, probably would have to be completely unique just for him.
Yeah.
But learning and understanding your learners to really cater your objectives and your training specifically to that person. All of our learners are unique. Probably not as unique as Buddy.
Can you imagine doing a persona?
Yes,
for
right, yeah. Put together a learning profile
like
here.
Like sugar.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, starting with understanding your learner and putting together a unique experience for the people that you're having in the course. Super important.
I love like the scenes as he's just kind of walking around, figuring out New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Even like playing Frogger as he's like trying to cross the street. Sometimes with learning, the best way to learn is just to allow people to tinker with
yeah.
things. Just get in and, you know, whether even that's like a sandbox type of experience, play with things, you know, try a couple things out. And sometimes it's just being in New York City, learning how to cross the street on your own, figuring it out on your own, tinkering around with opportunities there is sometimes a really helpful way for people to learn.
No, you're completely right. Like, I'm for sure not saying self-directed learning is a bad thing, because you're absolutely right. For certain situations, and we're always learning new like software or new sort of artistic tools around here. And you ask most of that team, they don't want you to give them like tutorials and a whole training day. Just give me a login, I'll mess around with it and figure it out. So there's such great value in that. And Buddy did learn so many things just by doing it.
Yeah.
And then the point of like, there could have been some coaching along the way that would have smoothed a few things out. So, all right, well, we're going to go then from this magical world of Buddy the Elf in New York City to a somewhat, I'd say a little bit of an in-between, right, world. So, the last movie that we're going to talk about is The Santa Claus.
I am not Santa Claus. Ah. Did you or did you not read the card?
Yeah, I read the card.
Then you're the new Santa. In putting on the hat and jacket, you accepted the contract.
What contract?
The card in the Santa suit. You said you read it, right? So when you put on the suit, he fell subject to the Santa Claus. Here.
The Santa Claus? Oh, you mean the guy that fell off my roof?
No, no, no. Not Santa Claus, the person. Santa Claus, the Claus.
What?
Look, you're a businessman, right?
Yeah.
Okay. A clause, as in the last line of a contract. You got the card? Okay, look. The Santa Claus. And putting on the suit and entering the sleigh, the wearer waives any and all rights to any previous identity, real or implied, and fully accepts the duties and responsibilities of Santa Claus in perpetuity until such time that wearer becomes unable to do so by either accident or design.
What does that mean?
It means you put on the suit, you're the big guy.
It's ridiculous. I never put on a suit because...
Try to understand this! Let me explain something to you, okay? Toys have to be delivered. I'm not gonna do it. It's not my job. I'm just an elf. It's Santa's job, but Santa fell off a roof. Your roof. You read the card, you put on a suit that clearly falls under the Santa Claus, so now you're Santa, okay?
A question.
What?
When can I get out of here?
Dad, you gotta see this place!
You leave tomorrow morning. You have 11 months to get your affairs in order, and you're due back here Thanksgiving.
I'm not coming back here on Thanksgiving.
I'll ship the list to your house.
Oh, no, your pulse is great. I don't know, Scott. You're as healthy as a horse.
Yeah. Clydesdale.
Okay, look, so what? You put on a little weight. A little weight? Does this look like a little weight to you?
Weight can fluctuate from year to year.
Fluctuate? You make it sound like I'm retaining water. I've gained 45 pounds in a week. Pete, what's happening to me?
What's your diet like?
Milk and cookies.
Really?
But I don't finish all the milk.
Well, then there is your problem. Just try to cut back on the sweets, okay?
Anything else?
Yeah. How fast does hair grow? Facial hair.
What?
I shave in the morning, in the afternoon. I look like this.
Well, it could be a hormonal imbalance.
That would explain the mood swings.
Mood swings?
Yeah, but look at my hair. It's turning gray.
Oh, it's middle age, buddy. It happens. And with that body, you should be thankful you have hair. Look, if it bothers you, you can dye it, and you should dye it. just kidding.
All right, so the Santa Claus, just a really kind of brief summary here is, the concept is that Scott Calvin, who's a businessman, divorced, has a son, not super involved in his son's life right now, definitely on a career path. Santa lands on his roof, falls off his roof. Santa goes out to, or I'm sorry, Scott Calvin goes out to find out what's going on, picks up the suit, and again, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but by doing that, becomes the next Santa Claus. And so we trace him through the whole story, or the whole movie. He doesn't understand what's happening to start with. His son believes what happened. He ends up at the North Pole for some brief orientation. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And then eventually becomes Santa, puts on weight, grows facial hair. And it's this whole year of trying to figure out what is going on and not wanting to be Santa. And then eventually embracing it. And it also helps him, like, restore his relationship with his family and that kind of thing. But
I have to admit how clever the title is. I didn't know as a kid. But I watch this movie all the time. And just, like, recently realized that, you know, Claus with an E, the Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And I just have to, yeah.
We have a clip of that, and we'll, like, we're gonna, let's play that now.
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
Right, so the whole point is, it's a legal statement, right? Like, a contract, he is now Santa, but
yeah,
that's why
it's really
why
smart.
The,
it's
right.
Brilliant. I love it. And I appreciate the movie so much more now after, even though they clearly say it very, you know, very obviously in the movie, I just think that's a really funny concept, and I think they pulled it off really well. But as you were going to say, Miriam, I think some of the... Well, let me pause there.
Yeah.
Did you want to go right into onboarding?
Yeah, well,
I was going to give
a little transition or
okay.
Whatever. But, yeah. So I think what was interesting is that I did read a really kind of fun blog post about this. There's lots of things you could pull out of this movie. Again, I think we have, like, fear is a motivating factor. It keeps popping up. But...
The clip that we played was specifically when Scott Calvin arrives at the North Pole for the very first time. He still doesn't really understand he's Santa. And you hear Bernard, who's the head elf, essentially explaining to them. And what, you know, learning and development teams are often very involved in onboarding. They often write the materials, you know, they often help design those experiences. And Scott Calvin did not have a great onboarding experience to the role. So I just, that's kind of an interesting, I don't know if anyone had any thoughts as you were watching this.
Bernard feels like he just gave the speech to the last Santa, like last year almost.
Too.
He's
yes.
very annoyed of having to do this curriculum again or something, because he does seem almost rushed and do the job and get out of my face kind of thing, which I find interesting because it leaves Calvin kind of confused and standing there not sure what to do.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have made a great movie because the whole movie is him learning how to be Santa.
Absolutely.
But for his own success, a better onboarding program would have been great.
Well, setting clear expectations. So like halfway through the movie, he's just waking up and he's just putting on pounds and pounds, and he has facial hair and he shaves, and like, so then you see him in his office and he's wearing sweats and he tries to explain it away because he got, you know, he had a bee sting.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, a bee sting? Really? He's like, it was a big bee. You know, it's just stuff like that had Bernard explained over the course of this year, you're going to put on all this, just things like that. When we think about onboarding or we think about really introducing a learner to any new experience, setting clear expectations in our world, it might be, how long is this experience going to be, or how many assessments are there going to be, or things like that. Those can all be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wouldn't have had to fight it as much with the gym and shaving all the time.
He just
would
have let it happen.
Yeah,
he could have just drank milk and
cookies. Right, that would have been the job.
Well, there was something else, too, I think, like you already picked up on, but Bernard's whole attitude was very rushed, very, like, very impatient, very just like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes there's a tendency, whether it's in onboarding or just learning and development in general, you know, we do this a lot. And sometimes we can find it repetitive. And just putting ourselves, again, going back to maybe learner personas or learner-centric learning, putting ourselves in the shoes of that new person or the new skill they're trying to learn or the new knowledge they're trying to pick up.
I was going to say, Bernard almost felt like Calvin should have known this already, because the
right.
kid knew it, you know,
knew
everyone
it.
Kind
his
of knows the
knew
story,
it.
And the fact that he had to describe it to him was almost annoying to Bernard, it seemed
right.
like, so maybe just stepping it back.
It's the facilitator who starts the meeting going, all right, who did the pre-work?
Yeah, exactly.
What, no one? Like, oh, geez. Like,
no pre-work for Scott Calvin, right. right, yeah.
But I guess you never know what level your learner's coming in at, so.
Well, that's another great point. Like, they just sort of made an assumption, like
mm-hmm.
you said, and he had no... It's even funny, like, throughout the movie, like, he doesn't know how to get down a chimney, or what if there is no chimney, or he talks about almost breaking his back trying to shove a kayak down a chimney, just stuff like that makes it really humorous. So anybody else have any last thoughts on the Santa Claus?
Always read the terms and conditions.
There we go. That's exactly right.
Saying try to understand this might not be the best way
yeah.
to have someone understand this.
That's right.
Think harder. Come on.
No, absolutely. And, well, this has been a really delightful conversation. Does anybody have any last, or you want me just to wrap this up? Because I'm good. Yeah. Okay. So this has been a really delightful, fun conversation. Obviously, I'm sure at certain points we were maybe stretching our learning themes a little bit, but it's just fun to kind of think through them and take some lessons from those movies. So. You know, our learning experts is one of our favorite things to do, right? Is to see learning in everything. And one of the great things, like I mentioned earlier, about working with this team, all of you, thank you for joining in. Like, I knew all of this conversation flowed so easily because of your laser focus on learning and just applying that to any kind of situation, being able to design amazing learning experiences for our clients, and I love that. So I also want to let you, our listeners, know that this is our final podcast of 2022, as you probably expected, hence the holiday theme. So we're excited to come back in 2023, and we're going to begin the new year by taking a look back and forward. Dr. Jerry Zanstra, a frequent guest on the podcast, is going to take a look. We're going to look at learning trends from last year, what we projected. We're going to see if we were right or wrong, and then kind of what we're projecting going into 2023. And then we're really excited next year to start having some industry guests on the podcast throughout the year. And they'll be talking about their experience, some of their take on learning, in the very either industries that they're in or the specific positions that we're in. So that'll be an exciting new thing for next year. We're looking forward to that, but in the meantime, we want to wish all of you, our listeners, a blessed holiday season, and we hope that you all get some time to rest, some time to recharge, and a special time with family and friends.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.